Taieb Saleh's 1966 novel Season of Migration to the North has been called the most important Arabic novel of the 20th century. But Saleh's work is barely known in the United States, although it's available in paperback as part of the Hahnemann African Writers Series. In the first installment of this summer's Underappreciated Literature series, we will be taking a look at Saleh's life and work, and I'm pleased that it brings Bruce Robbins, Professor of English and Comparative Literature at Columbia University, to this show. Welcome.
Thanks very much.
And you teach this course? You teach this in one of your courses?
I teach this as part of a kind of world literature course, yeah.
Saleh is from the Sudan. Is he usually grouped with Arabic writers or African writers?
I think he can be grouped in all kinds of ways. He actually talks in the novel about being the weirdness and of being Sudanese as being both African and Arabic kind of at the same time, which is, you know, not something you can say about all of Africa.
Well, ever since African colonies began to gain their independence in the middle of the 20th century, there have been many celebrated post-colonial African writers. What sets Saleh apart?
That's a really good question. Let's see. One way to say it maybe is to compare him with Chinua Achebe, who's sort of done better in some ways. And from a certain point of view, you could say starts off in a similar place. Achebe, as people may know, reacted very, very strongly to Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness, which he wrote in a very famous piece, was racist and basically shouldn't be taught and read. What Saleh did is he took Heart of Darkness, took the Heart of Darkness story, and just turned it around. The Conrad story is a story about Europeans penetrating into the Heart of Darkness in Africa. In particular, it's the story of sort of two characters. I hope everyone has read it. Good summer reading if you haven't. A kind of monstrous figure, Kurtz, you know, who goes native supposedly and behaves very, very, very badly. And another more ordinary European who goes in search of him. And what Saleh does is he turns the thing on its head, and there are two Sudanese who go to the Heart of Darkness in London, up the Thames instead of up the Congo. And one of them is a kind of monster who commits unspeakable acts, and the other one is kind of a normal person like us who is fascinated by the horror of all this.
The Europeans in Conrad's story are committing these unspeakable, horrible acts as a result of colonialism, and to some degree, these guys are in reaction to post-colonialism.
Exactly that. I mean, I hope I can say this on air, but the extraordinary sentence that no one who reads this book will forget is the kind of monstrous figure. Mustafa Said says, "I'll liberate Africa with my penis." The idea being that his monstrous acts are basically to seduce, lie to, and treat extremely badly every white woman he can.
And he does have quite a bit of appeal, it seems.
He knows how to exoticize himself to play on all the Western fantasies. Whether it makes him happy or not is another question.
Would you read the opening paragraph? It's a rather long paragraph, the opening paragraph of the novel in which the narrator returns home to the Sudan?
Sure. "It was, gentlemen, after a long absence, 7 years to be exact, during which time I was studying in Europe, that I returned to my people. I learned much, and much passed me by, but that's another story. The important thing is that I returned with a great yearning for my people in that small village at the bend of the Nile. For 7 years I had longed for them, had dreamed of them, and it was an extraordinary moment when I at last found myself standing amongst them. They rejoiced at having me back and made a great fuss, and it was not long before I felt as though a piece of ice were melting inside me, as though I were some frozen substance on which the sun had shone, that life warmth of the tribe, which I had lost for a time in a land whose fishes die of the cold. My ears had become used to their voices, my eyes grown accustomed to their forms. Because of having thought so much about them during my absence, something rather like fog rose up between them and me the first instant I saw them. But the fog cleared, and I awoke on the second day of my arrival in my familiar bed in the room whose walls had witnessed the trivial incidents of my life in childhood and the onset of adolescence. I listened intently to the wind. That indeed was a sound well known to me, a sound which in our village possessed a merry whispering. the sound of the wind passing through palm trees is different from when it passes through fields of corn. I heard the cooing of the turtle dove, and I looked through the window at the palm tree standing in the courtyard of our house, and I knew that all was still well with life. I looked at its strong, straight trunk, at its roots that strike down into the ground, at the green branches hanging down loosely over its top, and I experienced a feeling of assurance. I felt not like a storm-swept feather, but like that palm tree, a being with a background, with roots, with a purpose.
Sounds idyllic. Does that sense of purpose, of being comfortable in the village where he grew up, stay with the narrator throughout the novel?
That is the question. This is such a brilliant beginning to a really brilliant book, in part because nothing in this description stays the same as everything.
He set you up for
a pitfall. He has set you up. Oh, man, has he set you up. But not for a simple fall, because you see, he really does. I mean, he, Sali, as well as he, his narrator, he loves the people and he loves the place and he loves the palm tree, and his metaphors are the metaphors taken from that life.
Which part of Sudan are we talking about?
We know exactly because he always wrote about the same village, and it is exactly, there's a geography here which is very precise. The point where the Nile, which of course is flowing north, rivers flow north, that is up, bends and goes from west to east. So symbolically, it kind of splits the nation in two.
And this is also symbolic in another level, because we're talking about Africa and Europe. And it's important that the title is Season of Migration to the North, not to the West, because often we refer to the great cultural divide, we're talking about the West and the East.
Well, and he talked about the East and the West. I mean, when he was asked what the novel was about, he said it was East-West. The reason I emphasize the North-South is that, as we've had a chance to see in all the newspaper stories about Sudan in recent years, the split between North and South inside Sudan is a huge split.
And Sali is dark-skinned? He's not?
Darkish. I don't know exactly how.
But I mean, is he more? Because much of what we've heard about the conflict has to do with Arab versus
right. He's a northern. African. He's a northerner. And he certainly has spoken publicly about the injustice that he feels sometimes is done to the northerners when their treatment of the southerners is described. But he's, I think, really been wrestling with the problem of, you know, how to be fair. This is not a political novel in any kind of it doesn't try to deal with events in any kind of day-to-day way, not at all. I mean, it's really a human story.
In what ways do Sali's unnamed narrator and Mustafa resemble each other? Because you get the feeling that they're two peas in a pod in an odd way.
Well, I mean, both of them have gone north. Both of them have left Sudan and made lives for themselves, gotten educated and to some extent made lives for themselves on the basis of a Western education. The differences are probably a little bit more obvious than the similarities, in the sense that our narrator is a very sort of proper, conventional person, and of course Mustafa Sayyid is a sort of monster. And yet, I mean, one of the two really crucial scenes around which this novel revolves, which I suppose it's partly a reason why it's underappreciated. It's not a book that you can give to high school students.
Because of the sexual content.
There's a lot of sex and there's a lot of violence, and the sex and the violence are connected. Basically, the two big scenes are scenes of violence in bed. I mean, the bed becomes a kind of battleground. And part of the resemblance of the narrator to Mustafa Sayyid is acknowledging that he shares some of the feelings that Mustafa Sayyid has, even though he's not going to act on them in the same way.
Well, Mustafa refers to himself occasionally as Othello, but Othello is a tragic figure that we sympathize with. We do not sympathize with Mustafa.
Well, that's the tricky thing about great literature, is it makes you feel for people that you, on some level, feel you shouldn't feel for. And I think this is one of those one of those characters.
Well, throughout all of it, it seems as though we're left knowing very little about the narrator. Does he play much of a role beyond being an observer and a commentator?
One of the sex in bed scenes implicates him in a very, very direct way, almost to the point of making him suicidal. That is, to be very, very brief, and I want people to read this. I don't want people to feel that they know the story already, but there's a woman who is forced to marry a man 40 years older than she is. And she said, if you force me to marry him, I'll kill him and then I'll kill myself. And when it looks like this is going to happen, she says in the village, I want the narrator to marry me. And you know that he kind of wants to. In fact, he wants to in a big way. And why can't he? Because he's westernized and his family refuses to have more than one wife. He's got one already. He can't marry her.
Because to a large degree, this is also about how Islamic law is practiced in Sudan.
I guess so. I'm not a big expert on Islamic law. But, I mean, you certainly get the feeling from the conversations the villagers have, and the villagers have really articulate, wonderful conversations, that there's nothing that is not up for debate among the people in the village.
My guest is Bruce Robbins, professor of English and comparative literature at Columbia University. We're talking about Tayyib Salid's novel, Season of Migration to the North, written in 1966, but taking place 10 years earlier at the time when Sudan is just about to be freed from English rule.
Exactly. Now, there's a very clear, I mean, if you plot it, none of this stuff is said explicitly, but the kind of monster protagonist, whom we see much more, is born in the year that the British conquered Sudan. And the timeline of the novel ends at independence, although neither of these things is said. You have to sort of know it. So clearly this has a lot to do with the history of Sudan.
How old was Salih when Sudan gained independence?
It got independence in 56, and he was born in 29. Your math is better than mine, but I mean, not very old.
Did he play any role in the independence movement or its aftermath?
The tricky thing here is that he really made a life for himself in Europe, in England.
Well, he went to university in Khartoum, and then he went to London.
Then he went to London to work for the BBC, same kind of work you do.
And had a career in broadcasting.
And had a career in broadcasting, was a successful writer, went silent as a writer for quite a prolonged period. And I think it's rather because he just didn't know what to make of the civil war and the military coups. I mean, Sudan had just gotten out of control for him. So he could write, but he could write as a columnist. He didn't know what kind of fiction to make out of this.
He's also worked for the United Nations and for the government of Qatar.
That's right.
So, but Qatar is pretty far away from Sudan.
No, it's true. But, I mean, almost all of his life really has been lived outside Sudan.
Do you think if you were to ask him what he was first and foremost, that he would say novelist?
That's a really good question. I haven't had the opportunity.
Because it seems like even though he wrote this book that many people consider one of the great works of the 20th century, it's something that he did on the side.
Well,
Henry Green wrote on the side.
I think if you really, really care very deeply about a kind of social reality out there, even if you can write as well as he can write, you may well be tempted to think of your primary thing, the thing that makes you, the thing that you really care most about, as intervening, you know, via radio or TV or the newspapers.
Did he spend much time back in Sudan?
That I don't know. That I don't know.
And do you think that in reading this, it's probably unimportant in appreciating the novel, but do we gain any insight into the Sudan that we now read about in the newspapers?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think it has some prophetic. There's one prophetic scene in particular. There's a kind of truck caravan which stops for the night. And again, it's going north-south. I mean, all this stuff is plotted out very, very carefully. And a party happens in which people who ordinarily don't have anything to do with each other kind of gather around. And there's the taste of what it would be like for Sudan to be unified. And he really makes you long for this. But at the same time, he's telling you this is not really a unified country yet.
It's interesting that he lived in England but didn't write in English, as some people who grew up in countries that were Anglophone and then spent a fair amount of time in England have done. Why do you think that is?
Very good question. I mean, on a certain level, you could read Season of Migration to the North as an apology for someone who left Sudan and decided to live outside it, his own migration to the North. And when he calls it a season, he's making it seem like something natural, right? I mean, he's kind of defending himself, you might say, for leaving Sudan. But maybe it's a little bit like James Joyce, who left Ireland, never went back to Ireland, and wrote about nothing but Ireland. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a form of loyalty. And, I mean, obviously, his Arabic is spoken of. I mean, I'm not an expert and have no authority to speak about it, but is described as very, very beautiful.
But this is quite a lovely translation by Dennis Johnson Davies.
Yes.
Sometimes you have a feeling that the translation does not do justice to the language that it was translated from, but you get the feeling here that there is a real simpatico relationship between translator and writer. So what's the story with Salih today? Is he still alive?
He is still alive, when last I heard. I think, you know, in retirement. As far as I know, he's not writing fiction. I think he comes out with the odd statement about the world from time to time, but
And we have only two books in English, a collection of stories called The Wedding of Zain, and then this novel, which many people consider one of the great novels of the 20th century, unfortunately not well known in this country, Season of Migration to the North. This one available from Heinemann in its Africa series. And by the way, we have made it available on a link through our show page. So
well
if
done.
People want to buy it, they can. I understand there's also a Penguin Classics paperback. Thank you so much for being with
us. My pleasure.
It has been my great pleasure to talk about this this writer that I've just learned about for the first time.
And, read it. You won't be sorry.
No, I've read the book. I think the book is quite extraordinary.
Listeners out there.
Bruce Robbins is professor of English and comparative literature at Columbia University. It's been a great pleasure talking with
you
today.
Thanks very much.